Amen. Well, over the last few weeks, we've been making our way through this series in Genesis. And last Sunday, Byron talked about Jacob and the blessing that he put over his son Joseph. Today, I want to talk about Joseph. I want to look at Joseph's story because it's a story of conflict. But it's not just a story of conflict, it's a story of forgiveness. And I want to look at that with us. The problem is people have the ability to behave badly. Am I right about this? And in our Joseph story, the father behaves badly. The sons behave badly. Joseph behaves badly. I think all people in life have a propensity to do things that hurt other people. And here's the frustrating thing, isn't it? That sometimes the people we love the most will hurt us the deepest. Everybody, and sometimes it's family more than any other, because I think sometimes a brother or a sister or a son or a daughter or a mother or father think, because that's my relative, because that's my family member, I can speak to them however I want, I can treat them however I can do whatever I want. But those wounds cut deep, even from people who we love. So we're going to look at Joseph's story in Genesis chapter 37. I think most of you from Sunday school up have heard Joseph's story. Am I right about this? If you haven't heard it in Sunday school, then maybe you saw the play Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat. Okay, that was Donny Osmond. Now, years ago, when we lived near Chicago, the play was coming to town. It was Veronica's birthday, and she really wanted to go, so we went to it, and she loved every minute of it. Then she's asking me afterwards, so did you love the play? I was like, ooh, there was a lot of singing, if I'm honest. There's a lot. She said, but it's a musical. And yeah, still a lot of Donny Osmond singing. Anyway, it was painful. Genesis 37. And here's the story of Joseph, verse 18. So Joseph went after his, Genesis 37, verse 2. Let's start at the beginning. This is the account of Jacob's dysfunctional family. I just added that word, but it's true. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the son of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and he brought their father a bad report about them. Now, Israel, Jacob, loved Joseph more than any of the other sons because he had been born to him in his old age. And he made an ornate robe for him, the King James says, a coat of many colors. And his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, and they hated him, and they could not speak a kind word to him. Joseph had a dream. And he told it to his brothers, and they hated him all the more. He said to them, listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaves stood upright, while your sheaves gathered round mine and bowed down to it. His brothers said to him, do you intend for it to reign over us? Will you actually rule us? And they hated him all the more because of his dream. And that's Joseph. Joseph was the golden child. He was Rachel's son. Rachel was Jacob's favorite wife, and he has these brothers. And everyone was under the impression, kind of thought, suspected, that Jacob liked Joseph more than all the other brothers, but then he gives him this expensive coat, and now everybody is certain that Joseph is the favorite one of Jacob, and he likes him best. Because the other thing is, all the other brothers are wearing Old Navy and Crocs, but Joseph here, he's wearing Supreme and Lululemon. You know, that's what's happening here. And to make it worse, the coat has purple in it, which is a sign of royalty. And the robe reminded everyone that he was the favorite one. Today, if you had a favorite son or daughter, what would you do? You wouldn't buy them a coat. You'd probably buy them a car. But you couldn't buy a donkey then. A donkey was a mode of transportation, but a donkey's a donkey, right? Donkeys don't go 0 to 60 in 7 seconds, and donkeys aren't all that attractive. So it's the equivalent, you know, of Jacob buying Joseph a Tesla Model X, and then he buys the brothers a Kia to share. And so that's what's going on here. And so not only on top of this, we have Joseph bringing a bad report, we read. And the Hebrew word here for bad also implies false. This is verse 2. He brought a bad report. And so Joseph, it looks like, is making things up, and the father is believing him. And then he's arrogant. He has this dream, and of course he wants to tell the brothers about the dream, so he pulls them together at breakfast, and he said, hey, one day you guys are going to bow down to me. Isn't that exciting? And they say, hey, can we practice that right now? No, they want to kill him. They can't stand the guy. So they hated him even more. Verse 12, we read that the brothers had gone to a place called Dothan with the sheep, and they'd been there a few days. And so Jacob wants to send Joseph down, I guess, with some supplies. And he's heading down the road to Dothan, and his dreams turn into a nightmare. So I have some observations I want to share with you from this story. And the first one is this, that life's deepest wounds are sometimes caused by the ones that we love the most. Let's keep reading in our text. We'll pick up in verse 18. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. But they saw him at a distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. Here comes that dreamer, they said to each other. Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams. Verse 23, so when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the ornate robe he was wearing, and they took him and threw him into the cistern. Verse 28, so when the Midianite merchants came by, the brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites who took him to Egypt. The story sounds a little familiar, doesn't it, when he's sold? Some theologians say that Joseph is a type of Christ, and I believe that. But what we see here is that the brothers dislike him so much. The conflict in the family is so bad that they want to kill him. And it's a story that reminds us that you are not the only one who has had conflict with your family. It's been happening for thousands of years. Sometimes we think because we're related to people, we shouldn't have conflict, but it happens even with the ones that we love the most. You can end up in conflict with a parent, a father, a mother. It can be conflict between brothers and sisters or sons and daughters. They say today that estrangement is becoming epidemic in our country, that there 40% of our population today is in some kind of has some family estrangement problem right now. And maybe you don't have estrangement happening in your family, but if that's the case, then you most certainly know someone who does. And as I talk about estrangement, I have to be honest with you. I have six brothers and sisters, or I had six brothers. I have five brothers and sisters today, but there have been estrangement issues in my family that has split and hurt and divided our family. On the good news, and I don't want to get ahead of us in Joseph's story, the good news is I've seen relationships start to heal. It is possible to recover from those issues. But I want to remind you that even the people who you think you love the most have the ability in our fallen world to hurt us the deepest. Maybe you've been thrown in the pit of relationships right now. Maybe you're there right now and you feel the pain. And I'm sorry. I hope today you see a way out. But there's all these, when we fall into conflict with someone, it could be a friend, it could be a family member, there's all these emotions that we go through of loss, of mourning that relationship. There's feelings of anger and frustration and shame. We think of Jesus, we look at Jesus's life and we see all the hard things he went through. We think, well, Jesus was a stoic. He just took it all in. But Matt Hammett, our speaker at Man Camp this last week in Mexico, he reminded the men that the Bible uses 39 different words to talk about the emotions that Jesus experienced when people hurt him, because it wounded him deeply. In fact, it moves Jesus to say, I am overwhelmed with sadness because of all the betrayal, the loss, the confusion, the anger, the disappointment. Maybe you are there right now and you're feeling that. But there's hope, there's a way out. Here's a second observation. The robe comes off in the pit. We read this simple line in verse 23. They stripped Joseph of his robe. They took it off. Everything that made him proud and made him who he was, it comes off in the pit, doesn't it? When I read Joseph's story, I think of a guy I went to college with. We'll say his name is Tom. He lived on my floor at Biola University in our dorm. And our second year, our sophomore year, he, and I'll just put it this way, he didn't apply himself academically. Maybe that's the best way to put it. He didn't apply himself. And so he was not doing well in a class, so he went down to the admissions and records office to drop the class. When he dropped the class, they gave him cash money, and he didn't know this would happen. He came back to the dorm all happy about a wad of money he had in his hands. And so he realized that whenever he had a big date or wanted to buy new clothes, all he had to do was go drop a class. It was like his ATM, the student finance office, and they would give him more money that his parents were paying for his tuition. And so that went fine for a short while, but then he realized he needed a car for his dating life. And so he went and he dropped all of his classes. I'm not making this up. And he came back to the dorm with a wad of money. And then he headed down to Anaheim to a Pontiac dealership, and he bought a red Fiero. Anybody remember the Fiero? Yes, you do. They just made it for like 4 years. The thing looked amazing, looked fast. It was really slow. But anyway, he comes back with a red Fiero. Do you know what Fiero means in Italian? I'm not making this up. It means very proud. Okay, and that's what he was. And he drove that thing around campus, and he got a mad amount of dates out of it. But the joyride didn't last long because he didn't have enough cash for the whole car. He needed to take out a loan at the dealership for the rest of the car, and he didn't qualify, so he signed his dad's name. And so about a month into this joyride, his father shows up on campus, says, "What's going on here?" Takes the car back to the dealership, and this friend of ours is moved out, kicked out of the dorms because he's not a student anymore, moves into an apartment and starts vacuuming offices. You know, Italian means very proud, not anymore. By the way, today, I have friends that stay in touch with him. They say that today he is a financial advisor. So if any of you need financial help, I'll be glad to put you in touch with him. Just see me later. But I share this because the same thing happens with Joseph. He has all this pride in his life about how he's being treated, but then he ends up, the golden child ends up in a dirty hole. The royal robe comes off in the pit. The robe is a mask, isn't it? The robe is a facade that makes us look better on the outside than we really are on the inside. With a robe on, we try to act happier than we really are. We try to act more successful. We try to act busy and important. That's what the robe does. The robe tells people that my kids really like me and they're on the principal's list. You know, that's what the robe does. We all wear some sort of robe like Joseph because it hides our imperfection, but it's just a varnish, isn't it? What we're really dealing with, you don't see on the outside. It looks great on the outside, but we're hurting on the inside. The pit where Joseph is thrown, it has a way of breaking us. It has a way of humbling us. It has a way of stripping us of our facade. The pit is where we stop depending on ourselves and we start to depend on God. In Genesis 39, as we keep reading this story, we read that the Ishmaelites, they sell Joseph to a man named Potiphar. Potiphar works in Pharaoh's palace. He's a very affluent and influential person. The problem is in Potiphar's palace, he has a wife, Mrs. Potiphar. And Mrs. Potiphar is nothing but trouble. Am I right about this? She gets Joseph thrown in trouble. She's a liar. She makes things up and he ends up in prison. And in prison, he meets a couple of the Pharaoh's staff. One of them is a cupbearer who would test his food before he ate it. And the cupbearer has a dream, and he's wondering what the dream means. And so Joseph interprets the dream. He says, in 3 days, I think just a couple of days, you're going to be out of here, set free. And he does. And on his way out of the cell, Joseph says, hey, don't forget about me. Put in a word to the big man for me. And he promises to, but he forgets. Remember the story? 2 years go by. 2 years later, Pharaoh has a dream, and no one can interpret the dream and say what it means. And then the cupbearer goes, doggone it, there was that kid from Israel back in prison that can interpret dreams, and they send for him, and he interprets Pharaoh's dream. Let's pick up the story here. Chapter 41, verse 39. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has made all this known to you, because when he interprets a dream, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. So Pharaoh said to Joseph, I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Can you believe it? So I share this with you, this part of the story with you, to remind you that God can get you out of the pit of whatever is happening in your life. And God can turn things around. God can turn it around. This story arc of the Bible, that God can take the very worst things and turn it into the very best. This arc keeps repeating itself through Scripture. We have the problem of pain, but then there's always promise. There's always the hope that God is in control of it all. And that no matter what pit we end up in, that God has a promise for us and he can take care of us and his will prevail. And Joseph ends up running the entire country. It's hard to believe this. But then there's a famine in Israel. And as the story continues, we read that Jacob and his family are starving. So Jacob sends all the sons, except the youngest son, Benjamin, he sends them down to Egypt. He hears that they've stockpiled piles of food in Egypt. So he sends his brothers there, hoping they can come back with some food. And they get to Egypt and they meet Joseph. And at first we think that Joseph just wants to punish them, all right? Because he has one of the brothers tied up, bound up, and thrown in prison. We think, well, he's just gonna get even. And let me ask you this. Isn't it true that when someone hurts us deeply, our first thought is what? Revenge. I wanna get back. I'm gonna get them fired, you know. I'm gonna ruin their life. I'm going to say things, but I'm going to post this on social media so everyone can see, right? Our motive is usually, how can I get even? So we think that's what Joseph is doing. And then he sends the rest of the brothers back to Egypt. He says, bring Benjamin. And then he lies about Benjamin, or he makes up a story. He says, Benjamin stole a cup from my palace. And we think, well, he's just getting even. As we talk about forgiveness and forgiving people, especially family who've hurt you, I want to remind you that forgiving is not approving of what they did. Forgiving is not excusing. It's not being blind to the problem. It's not pretending that everything is okay. But we hold on to forgiveness because forgiveness cancels a debt. Forgiveness takes the bitterness out of our own heart. Forgiveness, when it happens, it's kind of divine and supernatural, isn't it? Because we can't do it on our own. When forgiveness comes, it's really a gift from God. And forgiveness takes hard work. It's not flippant. Some people talk about shallow forgiveness or superficial forgiveness. Someone hurts us deeply and we just go, okay, I forgive you. No. There's deep forgiveness. And deep forgiveness, we aren't good at it because deep forgiveness requires grieving. And in our society, we don't like grieving. Grieving takes patience and sitting in the pain and letting it soak in. It takes introspection. To forgive someone, it starts by admitting that this really hurts. It means sitting in that pain and going, wow, they really hurt me. They really ruined me. And then we have to grieve the loss of that friendship. I'll never see them again, or I'll never see them the same again. But you don't want to move on too quickly. Cheap forgiveness or superficial forgiveness just tries to move on as though nothing happened. It's not like that. When someone hurts us, it runs deep. And it's not wise, let me say this here, to jump to reconciliation. Maybe that will come. Hopefully that comes. Sometimes it can't come, especially if there's been abuse in a relationship. Everett Worthington, he's a professor of psychology at Virginia Commonwealth University, and he's a believer. He's a Christian. But he writes a lot about forgiveness, and he has a piece that he's written titled Reach Forgiveness, and it's the word R-E-A-C-H spelled out. So let me share this with you as we wrap up. The R stands for recall the hurt or remember the pain. In other words, admit that that really happened. Take a moment and just go, wow, okay, I felt that deep in my gut. That's not going away anytime soon. And this is what happens in our story with Joseph. When Benjamin shows up, Joseph is just crushed. It wrecks him when he sees his youngest brother. In fact, he can't stay in front of the brothers. He rushes to another room, and this is what we read in the Bible. Joseph wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him. Why? What's happening here? He's grieving. He's recalling the pain. The next letter, we have R, and then E is to empathize. Are you able to put yourself in their shoes? Empathy means that we can see things from their vantage. When you empathize, you see the other person as human. Sometimes we only see the offense. Sometimes we only see the monster in that person, and we can't even see what point they had. And so empathy means slowing down to put yourself and see things from their vantage and what that might have felt like. Empathy means seeing through their eyes. In 2020, a show came out on Apple TV titled Ted Lasso. You hear anybody Ted Lasso fans here? I think their motto was something like, kindness makes a comeback. And Ted Lasso was an American football coach, but the owner of a British English Premier League team hires him to be a soccer coach. She's divorced. Her name's Rebecca. And she wants to get even with her husband, who's a part owner. So she wants to ruin the team. So she hires Ted Lasso, who knows nothing about soccer. And he's oblivious to her scheme. But he shows up. The problem is, Ted Lasso knows people. He knows how to motivate. He knows how to encourage. He knows how to build team. And the team starts to win. Am I right? And she can't make it lose, no matter how much she sabotages them. And finally, Rebecca comes to Ted. And she says this. Ted, this is Rebecca speaking. Ted, I lied to you. I hired you because I wanted this team to lose. I wanted you to fail. I sabotaged you every chance I had. Don't you have coworkers like that? Family sometimes? Then she said, Rebecca says, Ted, I'm so sorry. Ted, I forgive you, Rebecca. Rebecca, you what? Why? Ted, divorce is hard. It makes people do crazy things. You and me, we're okay. That's what he said. What does Ted do here? He puts himself in her shoes. He's aware enough to see things from her vantage and see that this divorce has really made her make poor decisions and do mean things. And he empathizes. That's part of forgiving, to recall the pain. Empathize. When Ev Worthington, this professor, this believer who writes about this, when he talks about empathy, he says, he shares an exercise, and he says people who go through this exercise often, I think it's like 50% more people are likely to forgive the person if they go through this exercise. And he uses two chairs. And he says, take two chairs and imagine the person who has offended you sitting across from you. So go, don't actually invite the person in your home yet, but just imagine they're sitting there. And he invites you to sit down and have a conversation with this person who has offended you. And can I just say that if you have been a victim of abuse, however, then this is not where you should start. Start with a professional counselor. But if you need to forgive someone, then start here. So this is me having a conversation with a person who's offended me. So we'll start with me. You really hurt me when you lost your temper and you started insulting me. And you didn't even seem sorry. Got to move over here. The offender. All right. And the offender, now as you imagine their response, give them the benefit of the doubt. How would they respond on their best day, okay? So that's the offender responding. The best you think they can. Offender, I didn't realize it still bothered you. That makes me feel bad. I apologize. Me. I wish you had shown more remorse. It hurt me for days, and I still get upset when I think about it. Offender. I had no idea. I'm so sorry for causing you that kind of pain. It was more about me being upset with myself than being upset with you. Me. then why didn't you say that? Why were you so mean? Why didn't you just say, I'm sorry? Offender, I don't have any excuse. I should have said something. I still see you as my friend. I still care about you, and I hope that you will forgive me. So maybe there's someone in your life that you need to have that conversation with, get two chairs, and Ev says, literally do that. Go through those steps. All right, our next one, A, altruistic. Altruism means to care about someone else and care about their well-being, maybe even more than your own. Being altruistic means that you are giving someone a gift. And isn't it true that forgiveness is a gift? Because when you forgive someone, you're giving them the gift of friendship again. When you forgive someone, you're giving them maybe even the gift of love. You're giving them the gift of acceptance and the gift of inclusion. Can you do that? And maybe someone has forgiven you like that. So remember that. I know that Jesus Christ has forgiven you. And so remember that forgiveness is a gift when you give it. C is commit. Make a commitment. If you're going to forgive someone, make that a hard commitment. I want to invite you to write something down. And you could write this down on a card. You can write it in a journal. But if there's someone that you need to forgive, then there's several things I challenge you to write down. First, one, write down the name of the offender. All right? Two, write down the date. And if it's today, write down today's date. Three, name the offense. What is it that they did to you? And write that down. And then four, write this line. Today, I forgive Sean or whoever that person is. Today. And then write and keep that card or keep that note in a journal and make that commitment that I've forgiven him and that's the end of it. Some will ask, do I need to tell them that I've forgiven them? If it's possible, yes. In some relationships, because of abuse, it's not possible, and that's okay. But at least tell Jesus and have that freedom of saying, I have forgiven them, even if they won't forgive you. Maybe tell a trusted friend. Finally, H, hold on to forgiveness. Don't let the unforgiveness resurface. Sometimes you'll forgive someone, and then maybe you'll see them again at work, or you'll be at a family gathering again, and you'll see the person again. And I just want to say, once you've forgiven them, make that permanent. Hold on to that forgiveness. And then, if possible, reconcile. Sometimes, like I said, reconciliation is not possible, especially if there's abuse. But if you can reconcile, then do that. That's the most beautiful part of forgiveness. In Genesis 45, we read this. Then Joseph threw his arms around his brother Benjamin, and he wept. And Benjamin embraced him, weeping. And he kissed all of his brothers, and he wept over them. Then the problem here is his father, though, is still in another country far away. So we read in Genesis chapter 45 that Joseph writes him a note. Here's my paraphrase. Dear Dad, come as fast as you can and join me here. I'll give you a place to live in Goshen where you can be close to me. You, your children, your grandchildren, I'll take care of you completely. I'll make sure all your needs are taken care of and you don't need a thing. Love, Joe. I don't know who in your life today needs the gift of forgiveness. I ask that you start by praying for them. Prayer softens our heart. Would you do that? Pray that God blesses them. And pray that God can heal what's happened in your life and in their life. God can do that for us. God can move us from resentment to reconciliation. I pray that for you today.